Hillbilly Horror Stories presents Eerie Encounters.
This ghost sighting took place around 1900 in Leeds, which is in Yorkshire, England. It's not particularly scary, but it is true. I'll give you a bit of background on the area where the ghost sighting took place. That way you kind of get a feeling of the history of the location. The Builders Merchants, where the sighting took place, is located next to an old sandstone quarry that the Romans first quarried nearly 2,000 years ago. In the more recent past, during the Second World War, a prisoner of war camp for German and Italian prisoners was located right next door. And after the war, a camp was erected there to house displaced people from across the UK and Europe at the end of the war. So, as you can see, over the years, the area has seen a wide variety of people. Anyway, to the story. My dad used to work for a local builder and timber merchants, and money was tight. As a way to earn extra money, he used to open the yard in the morning and close it at night whilst working as a wagon driver during the day. This suited my old man, as he got extra pay, and it suited the employees, as they had someone that they could trust and didn't have to fork out extra for a security guard. The yard was located at the top of the hill and commanded looks over the surrounding area. The buildings my dad had to open up in the yard were not particularly old, probably built in the late 1800s. For the UK, this isn't old, really. The main office block was built in H-shape. It had long corridors with numerous offices located off the corridors. The building was two levels, ground and second floor. When my dad first started to perform these extra duties, we had to have a phone line installed in the house. Up until this point, we didn't have one. As soon as the phone line went in, my dad started receiving calls in the middle of the night from the police saying that the alarms had gone off. So as part of his duties, my old man would have to drive up to the yard, meet the police, and let them in to check the building just to make sure that there were no break-ins or intruders roaming about. This was quite a regular occurrence, which used to piss off the local police quite a bit. More often than not, it was the same door that was found to be open, which had triggered the alarm. The door was the door to the accountant's office where all the employees' pay tickets used to be stored. At the time, the workers used to receive their wages in a pay packet and not direct into the bank. This particular door was a big old English oak door, which was heavy as hell. I can still see it in my mind's eye. This door took some pushing to get open, so for it to open by itself through the night puzzled the police as well as my dad. On one particular night, the alarms had gone off again. My dad had to go meet the police, again. The police, used to this place by now, rather than traipse around the offices to look for intruders, would just unleash the police dog and let it roam through the building. On one particular night, the police dog went off into the building by itself. Around 5 minutes later, my dad and the police could hear the dog going absolutely crackers. At this point, the police thought an intruder was in the building, so they went running into the structure. A couple of minutes later, my dad went in and he found the police and the dog standing at the accounting office door. The dog was barking into an empty room. The dog was going nuts, but the police couldn't see what the dog was barking at. One of the policemen took hold of the dog's collar and tried to walk it into the room, but the dog would have none of that. The dog plainly wouldn't go into the room at all. The police officer went in by himself. He saw that there was no one in there, came out, made fun of the dog a little bit for not wanting to go in with him, and left my dad to close the office door and re-alarm the building. Well, a couple of weeks later, it's around Christmas time, and it's the office party season. There's one of these office guys working on the first floor of the office. This particular office was above the main meeting room. It was common knowledge that all the staff working late had to be out of the office by 7:30 p.m. That way my dad could lock the buildings and the yard up. At about 7:25, my dad goes up to see the man in the office to tell him that it's time to leave. When he gets there, he's having a chat with the man in the office. The man asks my dad if he has to work late because of the party that's going on in the office below. This puzzled my dad. He told the man that they were the only two left in the offices. The man said, "No, there's a party downstairs. I've been listening to them laughing and joking and heard the music." Again, my old man told him that there was no one else in the building. The man started to get a little pissed off at the old man. He insisted that there was a party going on downstairs. At this point, my dad told the man to follow him downstairs to the meeting room. When he opened the door, it was pitch black inside. No one was in there and hadn't been for a few days. At this point, the man was not happy. He got a little bit freaked out and got out of there as quick as he possibly could. That was definitely not the only story that came from that building. Another story was from one of the cleaners who had been offered a job there by her late mother. She was cleaning one of the offices late one night, and she heard her mother singing a song that she used to sing to her as a kid. It took her a split second to realize that her mom had died a few years earlier. This didn't freak her out, though. It actually made her quite happy to think that her mom was still around. So that's a bit of background to the building. Now my story. My mother and dad divorced when I was 11 in 1989. My dad soon after met another lady. It just so happened that her son, who we will call Mark, went to school with me. He was actually in my class. Because we knew each other from school, we actually got along. Anyway, because of all the crazy stuff that had been happening at the building, my dad used to ask myself and Mark if we would like to go with him to help him lock up. This happened quite often, and we used to love going to the yard, as there were some external buildings that housed some really old equipment that they used to use down in the mines and on the railways. For two young kids, it was great. We used to play in these old buildings in the yard, and we would find old paraffin lamps and old military uniforms that had been left over from the prisoner of war camp that used to be housed next door, and loads of other stuff that young lads would enjoy. One particular night, it was about 7:15 p.m., it was dark, and probably around January, myself, Mark, and my cousin, who we shall call Paul, were at the yard with my dad. We were outside the main building waiting for my dad, who was still inside. We were chatting, then we all went completely quiet. I don't know why, but we did. We then all turned around to look in the opposite direction. Again, even now when we speak about this, we don't know why we did it, but we did. We all see a man about 15 meters away walking down towards us. I could still see him clear as day. He had ginger hair and a green and white checkered shirt. He was in full color but really bright. The best way to explain it is the old TV sets where you had a little knob that you could turn for the brightness, and if you turned it a little too much, it was still in color but overly bright. That's what the man looked like. He's walking towards us, then he turns to his right and starts walking towards the building. He's not walking towards the entrance, though. He's walking towards the wall. Then he goes straight through the freaking wall. Now, myself, Mark, and Paul were all 12-year-old boys who thought we were brave. But I'll tell you what, that scared the crap out of us. My dad comes out of the building. We tell him exactly what had happened, and he thinks we're joking. After a few seconds, he knows we're not joking, and he puts us in the Land Rover and takes us home. After that, we didn't want to go to the yard with him anymore, so he used to just go by himself. About 2 months later, my dad gets home, and he's white as a sheet and shaking like a crapping dog. He sits me down, and he starts asking about the ginger-haired man that we had seen. It turns out that that particular night, my dad was locking up the building, and as he's walking away, he sees someone through the window inside the building. Well, thinking he's locked someone in, he goes back, opens the door, walks through reception, and at that point, the man walks past him. My dad, who is now only a couple of feet from him, asks him if he's by himself. The man doesn't stop walking, but turns and looks at my dad for a split second, turns his head back, and then continues walking down the corridor. At this point, my old man, who's not known for having much patience, shouts at this bloke that this place is shut and he has to leave. The man just keeps walking. So my dad starts following him until he sees the man carry on walking to the end of the corridor and through the freaking wall. At this point, all bravery my dad had leaves him and he gets the hell out of the building. My dad described the man that he saw to me, and it turns out the description is exactly the same. After that night, my dad stopped opening up, and he stopped locking up at nights and just continued to be a wagon driver for the company. I've just mentioned a few of the stories from the building and the yard, as there are literally dozens of sightings. The buildings are now gone, and a new housing estate was built there in the early 2000s. The quarry was an old sandstone quarry, so I wonder if that had something to do with it. Over the years, I've had some crazy stuff happen to me whilst I was in the Army, but that night will live with me until my dying day. I can still see it clear as day. I would love to know if any people in the new housing estate have experienced anything. That story is from Gary, a fire inspector in the UK. My mother died when I was 30 and she was 56 years old. After we found out that she had ovarian cancer, she survived about 6 months longer until her passing. She called me to say, "I'm going into the hospital for some tests." But I knew what it was. This is going to sound so strange. I was eating dinner when she called. I went back to my table, looked at my plate of food, and I saw the hand of God in my mashed potatoes. It looked like Da Vinci's painting of the Sistine Chapel with all the clouds there. I knew that she was going to die. There were other things that happened when she was ready to pass over. She was completely sane and lucid, although she was talking to someone that we could not see. That freaked out my brothers. We loved her to no end. We were a little scared, though, so we kept trying to get someone other than ourselves to stay with her in the room. Finally, my one brother walked up to me and said, "Barbie, you got to go in that room. She's talking to people and there's nobody there." But we were all there when she died. Going into that experience was very unusual. All that time my brother Mark was talking to her as she was leaving, he said, "Now, Mom, when your spirit leaves here, just get in the car and ride on home." He talked her through it. Previously, in other family situations, I had been the rock, the solid one, up until she was leaving her body. Mark had been quiet the whole time. I don't think he actually was engaged with the process of her passing. When the time to take her last breaths came, he was the one who took over, and he talked to her. My car had been parked in the medical center for 3 or 4 days, and I'd been inside the hospital the entire time, and nobody had been in or used my car. We all walked out to get into my car and we found the driver's seat was shifted all the way back, and it wasn't an electric control to move it. I got inside and in the driver's seat as I was thinking, how did this happen? I'm a short person and I obviously did not move the seat back because my feet and hands couldn't reach anything. I sat in that seat and tried to move it forward, but it wouldn't budge. Then, while everyone was sitting in the car, I stepped outside to move the lever to scoot the seat to its forward position. The people in the back tried to shove it forward, saying, "It's not going to move." My brother Mark drove up to my car with his truck and asked out the window, "What's wrong?" I told him what the problem was, and he simply said, "It's Mom. I told her to get in the car." He got out of his truck, walked over to the seat, and put his finger on it, and it went flying forward. Everybody else in the family had tried to make the thing move. It would only move for Mark. So, we drove home, and we went through the funeral process. I hadn't been back to my home in Louisville for at least a week. We were all outside getting ready to say goodbye and get the car loaded. We heard water running. It sounded like water was spewing out of somewhere, so we began to look around. We went down to the barn and we saw that the water spigot on the trough had come on and the water was just flowing out. We shut off the water, but everyone thought it was Mother. When I got back to Louisville to my house, I walked into the bathroom and I found a towel that was saturated with water. There was so much water in the towel that I had to wring it out. I had not been home at all. Nobody else was in my home for over that week. Even if someone had soaked the towel with water, it would have been pretty much dried out after a week. The next thing that happened was my mom started visiting my home. I had been very concerned about, and it was very selfish of me, about who was going to remember my birthday. My mom had been the only one who always remembered it. After she passed, she has shown up on October 7th. Every year for the past 7 years, on my birthday.
Many times I've been busy not really thinking about it being my birthday. For instance, one time I had gotten out of bed, and I was standing in front of the mirror brushing my teeth when I thought, oh, it's my birthday. Suddenly, it felt like someone smacked me on the back of my head, and I heard, happy birthday, Barbara. After my mother died, I felt very forlorn. It really hurt. I had regular dreams seeing her a lot, but when she was alive and I would travel to her home, I would give her a big hug. I could still close my eyes right at this moment and feel how her body used to feel when I hugged her. Right after the time of her death, I ached to have that feeling again. That ache has never gone away. Sometime later, I went to bed one night and I fell asleep. I woke up in the middle of the night feeling my mother holding me. She had moved in right behind me and put her hands around me. I was fully awake and determined not to roll over to see if it was, quote-unquote, real. I didn't want her to go away. She just held me, and I went back to sleep. When I awoke, I remembered thinking that when she had been with me, that in the morning, I believed that it was just a dream. And I thought ahead when she was holding me, I'll remember this as being real, and when I awake, I'll know it was real. And I never again had that longing for that physical hugging. There was one time after that, it was actually one of the most bizarre experiences that I've ever had, when I was in bed, just falling asleep. All at once, I heard a buzzing sound. It sounded like a radio getting loud static. When I opened my eyes, I saw a vortex traveling around my bed. I could see that it had layers of energy. I watched it go around my bed, and the dog was lying right next to me. Then my mother appeared. I exclaimed, "Mother, this is wonderful. How are you?" I was so happy to see her that I wanted to catch up on all the news and tell her all my problems. I was trying to talk to her about my latest romance problem, and she was not one bit interested. But she shook her head, raised her finger, trying to speak. "It's not... I can't. It's not clear." And she moved sideways in an arc above me. I reached out and I grabbed her because I didn't want her to go. I could feel her, feel the energy, and it was slipping through my hands. It was almost similar to grabbing water. Then she left. All at once, the energy from the top of my head opened. It felt like a garage door being opened, and my spirit came out of my body. It was like slipping out of a very long glove. My thought at the time was, holy hell, I'm having an out-of-body experience. And then I remember thinking, I wonder if this is what it feels like when you die. I remember that I had to go to the bathroom, so I sat up, and my body felt very, very heavy. I started to scoot my bottom toward the end of the bed, where I'd be able to reach my hands over to put them on the dresser to help get myself up. I got up and I dragged the bed sheet along with me. When I put my feet down, I realized that the dog had been hiding between the dresser and the bed. I put my feet on the dog and it bolted out of the room. I made my way to the bathroom, but I had to hold on to things to keep my balance. Then, all at once, my mother was there again. The buzzing had quit and the vortex was still there, but not quite as intense. She showed up then and spoke. "It's clear now." So she wasn't interested in what I had to say. She was there to bring a message for me to give to my brother Mark. She was referring to the energy being cleared so she could communicate with him. Then she proceeded to give me the message. When she talked to me, it was like she was giving me blocks of thoughts. It's like you give someone a pack of cigarettes, but where each cigarette is a word. You give them one word at a time until you understand the sentence, or if someone handed you the whole pack of cigarettes at once and you could understand the sentence as a block. So she talked with me in blocks of thoughts. Then she was gone. I woke up the next morning. I didn't have a stitch of clothes on. The dog was nowhere in sight. The sheet had been dragged along my fanny when I had been up from the bed. And that was the only time in 14 years in which my dog ever left my bedside. So my mom was around for 7 years, and on that last birthday, I was at Nag's Head. I traveled there with a man that I had been dating, and she had came to me when I was sitting at the kitchen counter stool. He was cooking breakfast for me when I heard my mom say, "Get up and go outside." I started walking out through the double doors when I heard her speak again. "Go through the bedroom or he'll follow you." So I turned around, went into the bedroom, and out onto a big deck which faced the ocean. She said, "I'm going on. I have a lot to do. It's time. You won't hear from me anymore on your birthday." She added one more thing, saying, "If you ever truly need me, call me or send for me. I'll be there if you ever have a true problem." It was a very bittersweet feeling. She left. Well, my family had a big argument about what to do with our family farm. It was really ugly. So I sent for my mother. It was the first time in decades when I felt that I couldn't fix the problem and I needed her help. I sent a spirit guide to fetch her. I spoke to her spirit saying, "There's an issue with the farm and I need your help." Then I waited for her to come back to support and help me. Spirit guide came back to report, "She's not coming." I said, "What?" The spirit repeated, "She's not coming." I was incredulous. "What do you mean she's not coming? Is that all she said?" "No," he replied. "She said that this is not a problem. I'm not coming here for this. You'll work it out." That was from Barbara in Louisville. A few years ago, a girlfriend and I lived in an apartment complex near some woods and a lake. I would occasionally take my banjo out to this boards on wires with a tarp hut that I found in the woods. Mostly, kids use it to smoke pot, but it was also great to get some real down south picking going on. Anyway, I'm out there one night, because I'm an idiot. I'm practicing chords or whatever, because I still suck at it. Cue sticks breaking, people shouting, distant slivers of light shining through the hut's boards. So, you know, I ignore it as it all comes closer. A few minutes later, one of them comes in. He seems a little hazy. "Are you the architect?" No, I'm not." His friend waltzes in, machete in hand, telling me that he's on LSD. I play real chill as he and like four other friends come in and sit down next to me. They start telling me how euphoric they feel and how the banjo playing was euphoric. I guess Britney Spears on banjo should have that effect. And how he brought his machete in case there were crazy woods people. Anyway, my then girlfriend calls. I calmly tell her that I met some friends. She asked if they were high and if I was high, when one of them shouted that they were on LSD. Girlfriend wanted me to come home right away. I told her that I would be home really soon. Really, I just didn't want to immediately upset the machete wankers, just in case. Eventually, I tell them that I need to get home to my girlfriend. Bonus story, I get to the apartment and get chewed out for not coming home right after she got off work. Telling her I was trying to be careful around machete LSD wankers and was trying not to die didn't matter because she's a narcissist like her then-dying dad. That's from Alan Wayside.
You have been listening to Hillbilly Horror Stories Presents Eerie Encounters. If you have an eerie encounter that you would like read on the show, please send it to hillbillyhorrorstories@gmail.com.